IVM. Folks, welcome to Paisa Vaisa. I'm your host Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter, and I'm thrilled, honored, so many emotions to have Jaspal Bindra, Executive Chairman of the Centrum Group and veteran banker. We are going to talk about Unity Small Finance Bank, the future of banking, the past of banking, the Standard Chartered Marathon, and much more right after this short break. And welcome back. Okay, folks, so for those of you who do not know him, Jaspal Bindra is a banking veteran. He was the APAC, the Asia-Pacific head of Standard Chartered Bank for almost 18 years. Folks, this is the man who was instrumental in bringing the now extremely popular Mumbai Marathon, as it's called now, to Mumbai back in 2004. Currently, he's the chairman of Centrum Group, a diversified financial services firm, which is also the driving force behind Unity Small Finance Bank, which acquired Punjab Maharashtra Cooperative PMC Bank's operations a few years ago. And folks, please do be subscribed to Club Paisa Vaisa because you're going to get some bonus material out there. But that's a lot to say. Jaspal, welcome to Paisa Vaisa. Thank you so much for doing this for the listeners. What an honor, sir, to have you here.
Thank you for having me here, Anupam.
My God, this is so good. Jaspal, of all the choices, right? I mean, here you are. The year is, I think, 2016 or 17 or whenever. I think 15 or 16. Of all the choices you had with such a great banking career behind you, you chose to turn entrepreneur in 2016. Okay, now it's 2023. Okay, I was going to say 2022. The script says 2022, by the way. How do you look back at these past 6 or 7 years?
So, in 2016, we returned to India after a very long stay overseas. And we came with lots of plans and ideas, but largely hope that maybe the landing will be right. And today, which is 6 years hence, I'm very happy to say that it's been a very positive experience. And on many counts, if I look at it from a personal front, it's been great because we are back with our only child who was already settled in Mumbai much before we arrived here. And also, we are far more accessible to the extended family, most of which resides in India. So that's been great from a personal front. On the professional front, it's been very satisfying just to watch Centrum progress. Its initiation into lending and now having a banking license. We have completed in the last 6 years, six successful M&A transactions in the group. And very satisfying particularly has been Centrum Foundation, which is the charity activity arm of Centrum Group, which has done exceedingly and increasingly good work in this last 6 years. So for all these reasons, notably, one is feeling good. And then on the very, very personal front, I think turning entrepreneur has been probably my best decision, even though very late at 55, which is what I was when I came here. And I now believe, or I realize actually, that being an entrepreneur is a must-have experience. And I personally almost certain, or at least it's a very strong belief, that the next decade or two will be India's best for entrepreneurship.
Tell us something about the Centrum Group. Our listeners might not know much about it, but if you could just help us there.
Yeah, so Centrum is about a 20 plus years old group in financial services. They began with merchant banking. Then they added a foreign exchange high street business. Then they added a wealth management business. So it's been growing over this last two decades. It was founded by two partners at the start, but one active partner who continues to be an active co-founder in the group. And so I basically work together with him. And we basically, after I came, we had one clear understanding that, if we really have to scale up Centrum, we have to be in lending, which was an activity they didn't do earlier. It was largely advisory. And so I think in the last 6 years, what we have tried to work towards is we've stopped and sold some of the old businesses which didn't fit in well with lending. And we've grown new businesses which have led to the banking license. So the focus was always on getting a banking license, and we're quite happy that we have arrived there.
Yeah, we'll get into the banking part. Just one last question. I'm going to just sneak in out here because being an entrepreneur now here in the year 2023 versus, when I look back at your banking days, then you're giving loans to entrepreneurs. What does that whole, that call it a 180 or whatever, what does that feel like? And, when you go out to people and you meet them, how has that experience been so far versus when you were a banker?
Well, there's a macro and micro sort of situation to it. The macro is, you work for a bank all your career and then you own a bank is a slightly different feeling, whatever be the size difference. But I think, the business is the same. I think what I have understood from the other side of the table is actually very helpful when one is on this side of the table. I'm far more appreciative when we get no for an answer, for instance, from an institution, because we understand what goes behind that decision making, etc., which I think is important. I mean, you know, just to have that empathy, to have that understanding, I think is enriched. But clearly, I've enjoyed working in some very fine institutions in my corporate career. But having the privilege to work for yourself is obviously a bonus.
Dream for a lot of our listeners. Okay, what's your top-down view of India's private banking sector as it stands today? You know, I think the foreign banks have kind of ceded some amount of ground compared to when we were 20 years ago and the 21st century was starting. If I just look at the private banking side, you've just got ICICI Bank, HDFC and Axis. That's it. Do you think next 20 years from here, how do you see things shaping out? Can anyone probably challenge their domination, or how do you see things going forward?
So if I look at the private sector banking today, clearly there are some very, best way to call them is class players. They're very high quality players in the private banking system. And in at least, if I get my counting right, in about 25 years or less, they have provided a very attractive alternate to the PSU banking system. I feel that if I look at the private bank's dominance today, firstly, they deservedly now account for 1/3 of the pan-India banking share. But if I look at the private bank, the dominant private banks today, I think them being challenged in the first 10 years is near impossible. In 20 years, at best, maybe. And I can explain why I have a slightly different view over tenor. I think if you look at any regulated entity or regulated industry like banking, it takes a long time to build and compete with dominant players. And while you are doing that, the dominant players continue to grow rapidly based on their excellent franchise, their reputation, etc. So there's always a lag and lead in the catch-up. However, over 20 years, a lot could happen. And the things that come to mind, for instance, are there could be regulatory relaxation in terms of allowing business houses or private equity firms or international banks to be majority owners of domestic banks. That could be one changing landscape in banking, and that could sort of alter the positionings and the rankings of banks. The second thing is, you know, the debt capital markets in India are still very shallow.
Really?
And if they were ever to match the depth we have in the equity markets over time, which is the intention and the hope, then clearly a lot of the banking business could move away from the banks to the capital markets. I think that could be one possibility. Technology so far, you know, in fact, there's a lot written about technology being disruptive, etc. But in reality, on the ground, technology today has served as a facilitator to banking for reach, for cost, for convenience, etc. However, it can't be ruled out that in the long run, it does become a disruptor. You know, there is AI, there's so many things coming. So we will have to, at least at the back of the mind, that's a possibility.
Yeah.
And the last thing which I'm most certain is also going to happen is, because the green shoots are already there, is there was a very big asset class of fixed deposits in banks. I think that is going to give way to the equity market. I think we're going to see a shift. We're already seeing it in the way the SIPs are being subscribed, etc. Yeah. So I think a combination or some permutation of these kind of factors, if they play out in the next 5, 7, 3, 4, 5, whatever number of years, then over a 20-year period, there could be a change in the ranking pattern that we see today.
Yeah. What do you think about the fintech disruptors? Aajkal ke bachche kuch bhi matlab kar rahe hain just because they've got lots of capital from abroad, whereas, you know, the way that we build businesses in India used to be very different. So anyway, but
actually,
what do you...
fintech, you know, if you look at it, hasn't been a disruptor. It has reached out to a segment the banks were choosing not to or were unable to for cost reasons. So I think it has, you know, increased the size of the cake, but not necessarily taken it all away from the banks. And now with the new regulations, etc., they have to now run it through a regulated entity, etc. So, you know, that's why regulation does. Yeah. In a regulated entity, it is always going to be a little more challenging to be a clear disruptor. But I do feel that over time, you know, also as people's appetite for convenience and for not ever wanting to visit a bank, which is the case with our children, not wanting to write a check, etc., you know, becomes more sort of mainstay, then I think we will see technology probably more disruptive than it is today.
Yeah, I was asking because, you know, this is a generational shift. When the banking that, say, my parents had or I had versus what the experience now is today, we spoke about how the generation today does not want to go into a bank. I mean, do you think, whereas today, if you look at the disruptors, layers, the RBI has kept a nice regulatory wall out there for people to enter, but these people are just waiting to break in and do, what's that phrase, move fast, break things or something. How is that, has it changed the life of a banker in India today, or is that something that is going to happen anyway?
See, if you look at the big growth fintechs, they've all done it on the strength of burn capital.
Yeah.
The very few people who've done it bootstrapped. So I think in the broking side, Zerodha is bootstrapped.
Yeah.
And there are a few other examples like that in the like Pay Nearby, etc., who have done it in the lending side as well. But very few examples. So I think that was possible because there was a surge of capital flow. If that doesn't sustain, I think from a sustainability point of view, I think there has to be the banks and the fintechs have to work together.
Yeah.
They should see themselves as partners rather than as playing one against the
other. Because technology is seen as one of the biggest successes globally. In the month of December, you normally have people coming from the US to India and they freak out when they see UPI because they're not used to that kind of stuff.
See, there's one big difference, Anupam, in India, that is the government support for digitization is unprecedented around the world. I mean, there is no other government in any developed country even who is as forceful behind the initiation and growth of digitization as India is. And otherwise, it wouldn't have been possible. If you didn't have eKYC, you didn't have Aadhaar, you didn't have digital signatures completely acceptable as legal tender in a way of saying, it wouldn't have happened. So I think the government has a very big role to play in this thing. It's normally we discount, we used to say, you should try to do business which is outside of the government's purview. But on the digitization, I think they have been a positive force.
Yeah, folks, you don't know how tough it was to open a bank account in 20 years ago. That form was what, 20, 30 pages?
50 signatures.
And you need a reference.
And
you need a reference. I think the PSU banks, you probably needed the branch manager to know you, and the branch manager used to be a big deal at that point of time. I think foreign banks used to require some nice big deposit also for you to be with them. But what a change. Folks, we're going to take a small break out here, but on the other side, we're going to talk about PMC Bank and technology, which Jaspal just mentioned a while ago, the longer term plans of Unity, and all of that right after the small break. And remember, folks, Club Paisa Paisa members, you'll be hearing this 3 days before the usual release, which goes out on Monday. You'll be listening to this on, I think, Friday evening. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Okay, just while PMC Bank, I don't think what in the history of RBI, at least recent years, have they awarded a small finance bank license or anything of the sort. What worked in your favor against competition when you went out, when the RBI awarded their expression of interest to Centrum and BharatPay, of course, a joint venture for PMC Bank?
So actually, RBI is best positioned to,
to answer that.
This.
Yeah.
But I'll make an attempt. In my understanding, I think a few factors worked for us. I think passing the fit and proper test was probably foremost critical. I think there would have been no starting point without that. So we were fortunate that we got through that. I think we had a slightly different approach from the other bidders. We said that if we're going to do this, then let's go with full trust in RBI and Government of India's impartiality on how they will restructure the depositor payout scheme. And that allowed us to go with the confidence to bat on the front foot. And I can say now that faith was well placed. It turned out that they were very understanding. So it was a very optimal balance in the way they did it. They realized that depositors have to get some compensation, even though there was a large-scale fraud. But they also realized that they've issued a new license, and that new license must have feet and limbs to grow and not just get solving one problem to create another one. Another factor I think that played a big plus in our favor was right from day one, we had a very high enthusiasm on embracing the colleagues from Punjab Maharashtra Cooperative Bank. So much before we got into any guarantee that we were in the running, we were spending time with them. They were spending time in our offices. We were talking to them. We were trying to understand the institution. And I think that gave us both a lead time advantage in when the deal happened, but if it hadn't gone in our favor, then obviously it would have been a wasted effort. But I think that enthusiasm also probably had a role to play because the word was getting back to the regulators, etc. And of course, I think the fact that we partnered with multi-billion global funds like Sequoia Capital, Ribbit Capital, Tiger Global, and Insight Partners, etc., through Bharat Pay. But they are 90% of Bharat Pay. Obviously, it was a clear demonstration of the resourcefulness that the sponsors bring, both current and hopefully future as well. So I think some combination of this probably worked. But, you know, like I said, RBI probably knows best.
Yeah, we can have RBI on the podcast. But yeah, if you are a PMC depositor or whatever, I think they should wait for direction from the RBI, right? I mean, you wouldn't be in a position to tell us about what next for them. The RBI will decide the future course of action of what happens.
So the RBI has devised a scheme which has then gone and got approval at the Cabinet Committee of the Government of India.
Sure.
So the scheme is in place. So it's transparent now. They know when they will get the money. All retail depositors will get 100% principal back, but they will get it over a deferred period.
Okay.
And even how the institutional depositors will be paid has also been decided. So everybody now knows the scheme is public and it's known to everyone.
So there's no doubt out there.
I mean, Unity has to now, has the obligation to deliver on that scheme.
Right.
So, you know, obviously the PMC depositors will be praying and hoping that Unity delivers to that promise, etc. But we are bound to deliver to that promise.
Yeah. So let's go on the digital banking side, right? Because you've said that you've opted for a primarily digital banking route. And we've seen many players take this route in the past also. Mixed success. I won't say, you know, big bank success or total failure, but I would say mixed. Do you feel that India, or parts of which is called Bharat because that's rural India, will find some interest in banking digitally? What do you think?
So let me break it in two parts as to why we think digital is something we should emphasize on and what it might take in Bharat. I think, you know, the traditional banking as we know it is pretty well crowded and well established actually across India, particularly semi-urban and urban India. There's an overcrowding of banks, whether it's PSU, international, private sector, small private sector, old, new. So I think there is a lot of supply side there. If you look at recent data, there is clear evidence that retail digital, not wholesale, but retail digital has the highest growth potential. So for us, in a way, it's both a compulsion and an opportunity to go into digital. You know, there's no point trying to do more of the same. It's not going to get us very far. So we have to make this happen. So that is the compulsion. But it's also the opportunity because that's where the growth is. And when it comes to Bharat, as we call rural India, I am of the very firm belief that the only way we can penetrate banking into Bharat is through digital. It is not possible in the brick and mortar banking. So I think digital will play a much more significant, it may be less in value terms, but from an impact and a significance, digital will play a much bigger role in Bharat. It's already looking evident and it is going to be even more so.
I want to understand the longer term plan for Unity, because if I look at the banking sector in India, I don't think the RBI has given out a license in ages, except of course to the small finance banks. Look at, if you roll back to the history, you had the HDFCs and the ICICIs all come up from institutions. That was wave one. And there was some of it. There was also the Global Trust and all that which came in. And now you've got the small finance banks, SFBs as they are called. What's your longer term plan? But the SFBs also have a roadmap to become a full blown bank at some point of time. What do you think? How are you going to follow this path?
So the long-term plans for Unity, I can share with you in short. It's a two-word answer. It is to grow profitably. And there is a philosophy behind it. So we don't want to burn capital to grow. You know, that's a path we could take and suddenly show very big numbers, large customer base, big distribution, etc. We've chosen that's not our optimal path. We also don't want to sacrifice growth for near-term profits. Mm-hmm. We can start making it look like, oh, we're profitable from day one. We are very profitable very early in our journey, etc. So we are going to be, the thinking in Unity is that we will be very watchful and nimble. One, to adapt to challenges, because there will be many of those, but as well as adopt opportunities as they emerge. And that's the kind of balanced middle path we want to take. We think retail digital is the journey we are well programmed for. My own belief is that all new licenses that will come henceforth will all be predominantly digital retail, even though I absolutely agree with you that the past has not been been so successful because people had digital as a supplement. You know, there's a different approach when you do it as this is your mainstay and this is my supplement. And obviously for the big banks who are already big brick and mortar, they can't make that shift 100%. So they all have a supplementary app. But I think for somebody coming in late, and we've seen many examples before we got the license, I traveled to talk to Nubank in Brazil, to Krakow in South Korea, to Monument Bank in London. They all have different models. A lot of them were on burn capital and grow the customer franchise and then create a value. We've chosen to discount that. Some others were just, you know, make it very attractive and convenient and easy for people to deal with, but not really make it very capital intensive. And that also has an pros and cons. So we've taken some learnings and we are hoping we'll do that. But, you know, a lot will depend. You know, India is so unique. The opportunity is so unique. It's the only market of a size and a very big size, India, where we are banking is still so unserved and underserved. You know, we don't have. So there are very few industries in the world or very few markets in the world where you can go and say demand is unlimited. How I execute my risk undertaking, my capital allocation, what I do to capture profitable business from within that is the real challenge. So execution is key in India. Whereas in markets like Europe, etc., you know, even demand, you have to generate the demand. First, you have to get the business in. Then you have to see what you can get. Here, business is not the problem. You know, so I think there is it's a unique situation.
Do you think deposits is the way to go? Because the SFPs all offer pretty high deposits. And to start from there, that's how you build one side of the balance sheet. The other side, I think, is more or less, I think it's easier. Going by what's happening these days, there's enough demand for loans. Deposits is a challenge. I don't know, what's your view on that?
So I think deposits have been price elastic for a while, and people, depending on their needs and their growth appetite, etc., will play the interest rate accordingly. There is a huge price for the current accounts and savings accounts, which the dominant players obviously get a better share of. But, you know, when you are... So all of these things make a lot of sense, a lot of complexity for big organizations. When you're starting from scratch, you know, the numbers we're talking about are completely insignificant. You know, if I get 5,000 crores of deposits in the next year or something like that, that'll be humongous for me. I can't lend out 5,000 crores. But 5,000 crores is what HDFC does daily. You know, so I need to do it in a year. So, you know, that's the scale challenge. So I think, you know, people get very confused because we all read these macro headlines and say, but actually from a small starting point of view, I don't think so. So I think for us, that's why we must show growth and we must be profitable in the not too distant future and then continuously after that. That is more the focus because I think that's what will get us the valuation. That's what will get us the client and it'll give us better sleep, you know.
And bankers need good sleep. All of us do. Okay, that's what we're almost done. What next for Unity? I stay in somewhere, you know, Bandra, Kharb, Western Suburbs, and I can see this very nice yellow color. The colors, where did you get the colors from? Nice, appealing to the eyes. And I can see that, you know, and I can see people there. Obviously, it's not open. What can we expect going forward? Not obviously giving out much details, but what can we expect?
No, I'm so happy that you've liked the colors and the branding. You know, we have several plans. We're going to launch an app. You know, we like to call it the super app, but every other bank has a super app as well. So we are going to launch an app, which we hope will be a very convenient, easy to use, anytime, anywhere kind of app. You can use it 24 hours a day, everywhere, from anywhere, and transact any transaction that we offer. We are going to do simple things like opening an account will be a one signature, one page form.
Nice.
I think that is quite an evolution. We will also do some very easy things. Like when you open an account, you get a line of credit automatically, whether you need it or not. So I think there are things that we're trying to bring in with a slight difference. But, you know, I think it's just as new players will come in, they'll think of new things. I think other players will think of also bigger and better things. So the cake is so big that, you know, we can't do everything for everyone. But for the niche that we choose to serve, we will try to be a little distinct.
Lovely. And I wish you all the very best. I hope to have you back. You know,
Thank you.
The branches are open and you've done business, I wish you all the very best. And we will be looking forward to what Unity does going forward and hope to have you back again. Now that the serious part is over, let's talk about the fun part. I know you're a foodie. Okay. What have you...
It shows
to me also. I love food also. Best places, anything you've eaten recently, restaurants, and please feel free to be global because I know that you travel a lot and anything.
So this is your most interesting question.
Okay.
And thankfully, you asked it last. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't have had time for anything else.
I want to keep my listeners listening to this. So beach mein kuch ho gaya toh. Yeah, please.
Now, so favorite cuisine is Chinese.
Okay.
And I think that's a reflection of the 20 years we have lived in and between Singapore and Hong Kong. Let's do Bombay. In Bombay, the favorite places are China House, Royal China, Sanchi, and Golden Dragon. I think those
Links
would
Pavilion?
Rank.
No, Links, Links Pavilion.
Links also. Links, recently we've actually, when we used to live in Bombay, Links was a big place with Baba, and we used to go and spend a lot of time with him. Yeah. But for some reason, we haven't been going there so much. So maybe that's a reminder I should go there. But outside of Chinese, we love Olive, we love Cafe Panama. But food is, we keep looking for new places, nice places.
When you were in Hong Kong, Singapore, the Far East, at that point of time, I'm sure Din Tai Fung would have been in your...
Of course.
Why don't they open in India? Can we, you know, get them here?
So I've had this query always that why don't the best places come to India? The Indians are spending the most when they go there on these places. So they have the wallet to spend on it. This consistent answer I've got is that the getting fresh ingredients into India in time is a very real challenge. And they lose their authenticity by not being able to get that and having to do with substitutes here. And I think that is the real challenge because, you know, you go to Dubai, you get great food. You go Singapore onwards, you get great food. You go Europe, you get great food. So I think that, so I do believe it's been such a consistent answer from everyone that I've spoken to in the F&B business that looks like that is stopping them from coming here.
Globally, that might be the case, but India itself has also got a lot of our own homegrown food, right? Do you have any favorite city wise? Like if I say, Jaspal, what's your favorite in Delhi? Would I get like a Peshawari or something? Or would you say an Indian accent or something totally different out there?
So in Delhi, clear favorite is the Maurya because they have, I think, both Bukhara and Dampok.
Oh, Bukhara, favorite. Sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Those two are where we always see everything.
Love
there
it.
Is great, yeah. But I think Delhi on average for food is a much better destination
than Bombay. Yeah, that's a debate out there.
I think the quality of the food is because I think the customer is far more demanding and discerning.
Yeah.
I think Bombay, we are nicer people. We accept what we get.
And we love our street food and vada pavs and everything. I'm actually waiting for the Indian accent to open here. I don't know when they will, but
NGO,
I have no idea when. Okay, food out of the way. Last few questions as well. Anything else that you're doing that you find interesting? Books, YouTube. Your son, I believe, is a producer of a lot of OTT content. He's done Love Per Square Foot. He's done Bandish Bandits. He's done a lot of anything happening out there. Anything you like? Anything you're looking forward to?
Yeah, so he's currently got three different movie projects on the floor, and we're waiting to see what comes out of that. And he's very happy, very busy. We are very happy for him because he's chosen a path of passion and made a career out of that. And he's been an entrepreneur from day one, which is phenomenal.
You didn't why didn't he choose banking or something?
There was never ever a question.
Okay.
I think he saw too much of what I was doing to know that this is not the place to be. I think he was in his very early, he was in early college, he had decided he wanted to go the creative way. And I think films was what he wanted. And he worked in Fox LA for a while. And then he decided to become an entrepreneur, come here.
Nice. Amrit, right?
Amrit.
Amrit Paji, if you're listening to this, all the best to you, and we shall look forward to your content. But there you go. That's it. That's a wrap on this episode of Paisa Paisa. My guest, Jaspal Bindra, Executive Chairman of the Centrum Group. Jaspal, thank you. Really, it was an honor to have you. Thank you so much for doing this for our listeners.
Thank you, Arupam.
And listeners, thank you for listening to this episode of Paisa Paisa. Remember that if you want video clips of this episode, please check out our YouTube channel where you'll get clips out there. And you can check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can listen to us on the IVM Podcast app or ivmpodcast.com. You can also follow us on our social media. We are IVM Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, folks, Club Paisa Paisa, subscribe to that. Early access, archival access, bonus content, a lot of stuff happening all day, so don't miss that out. And listeners, if you want to reach out to me, I'm your host, Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter. And thank you, folks. Really, thank you so much for listening to Paisa Paisa.
No material on the show should be considered as financial advice. The material on the show is for informational purposes only. Please consult a financial advisor before taking any investment decision.